welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I'm delighted to be joined by the Hugo-nominated author, Daniel Polansky. Daniel and I have a great chat about his brand new book, March's End, which was published by Angry Robot in May of this year. March's End is a portal fantasy with a lot of interesting twists, and Daniel's got lots of great insights and a fantastic perspective on publishing and writing and everything that goes with it. Before we dive in, just a quick reminder to subscribe or follow the show to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. We've got some brilliant things lined up in the next few weeks and months. I'm very excited to share them with you, so make sure you don't miss them by subscribing. I'm also excited to share that you can now get a Fantasy Writers Toolshed t-shirt featuring the catchphrase of the show, "Keep on scribbling." And you can get that on the Etsy store. So just click the link in the description to check it out. And if you'd like to join our community with over 400 writers at the minute, just click the link in the description and you can join us on Discord, on Facebook, and you can join a weekly critique group if that's something that you're looking for. And just connect with fellow writers to stay in the loop with all the latest writing news and trends and to get help with like beta readers and discussing ideas and getting help with research. Things like that all make a big difference. So if you want to be part of something like that, just click the link in the description. And lastly, don't forget we've got a Patreon page. You can get loads of stuff on there, including writing books and classes, writing guides, interviews, and a lot more. We've got all different tiers to suit people at different stages of their career and what you're interested in. So just click the link in the description to learn more. Now it's time to crack on with today's show, and I'm delighted to introduce Daniel Polansky. I'm delighted to be joined today by the Hugo-nominated author, Daniel Polansky. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here, or on it, so to speak.
Thank you very much. It's you must be quite busy because you've got a new book coming out soon.
Yeah, I do have a new book coming out, but it hasn't like made my life dramatically more busy. No.
Oh, yeah. So tell us about it. It sounds fantastic. March's End.
Yeah. So it's called March's End. It's sort of a genre mass up of, I guess, of a portal fantasy with a kind of family drama. Growing up, I came from a, you know, what felt like a big sort of big family. There were a bunch of kids and we had a sort of strong family unit. There was a lot of energy roaming around and whatnot. But of course, you know, obviously a lot of complexity in terms of that. And I guess I sort of like the idea of... like, what if the kids from Narnia, you know, what if they had a grew up and had a sort of more complex family dynamic and kind of running with that idea. So that's where March's came from.
Nice. And from what I understand, the March is this area that this family has to guard and watch over.
Yeah. So I do a terrible job of describing my books.
I'm totally in that camp as well.
Basically, the idea is that, you know, when this family, they're the Harrow, and at night they sort of magically journey to, they take on these personas in this other realm, the March, in which their family struggles and the sort of dynamic are played out over this elaborate fantasy setting with all of these different species and, you know, magic and whatnot. And the March is the name of that land, as you correctly surmised.
It sounds like a really interesting fantasy world. I always like the sort of where you're the portals, because I mean, Harry Potter, I grew up with Harry Potter, so that an element of portal fantasy and that, isn't it? The train station and stuff. But this sounds really interesting in that, like, you're traveling through this really sort of intriguing world. So I think a good place to start, because I know it's something that I want to know more about, and probably a lot of listeners want to know more, is about this world and the March and how you created it.
Yeah, the March was really, it was really fun to write this sort of fantasy world. I've written a lot in this genre I've written a lot of speculative fiction, but nothing really in the sort of high fantasy realm. So as I was writing this, my sort of mental joke was that this was a world where everything existed. And it was just a sort of rich and fecund as a, you know, your imagination as a child. So, The fun of trying to be able to, but it's a fairly small book. It's probably only like 330 pages or something. So the idea of trying to create a world where a novel where you had this really elaborate, rich fantasy world, but you're only kind of hinting at these different small bits of it throughout the text. So, yeah, that's The March.
Nice. Was it? What was the process like of creating that? Did you have like a sort of inspiration to create this world, and then you just sort of ran with it, or did you sit down and just come up with it all from scratch, just the hard way?
No, I mean it grew a lot over time. You know, I just have like kind of classic fantasy races, and then I kind of had this what to me seemed like a fun idea of making up sort of bizarre different ones. And over the course of maybe the 9 months or year that I wrote it, every so often I would come up with some idea that amused me. Like in this world, one of the sort of tenets is that the weather is like a vaguely sentient being, and you can kind of coax out like good weather or bad weather based upon songs you sing to the sky. Okay. Yeah, I thought that was fun. But that was something that was like, I don't know, maybe that came in like 2/3 of the way through the book. I was like, oh, I think that's cute. And, you know, then you go back and try to work it out, or you're like, you know, even towards the end of the thing, you're like, okay, actually, it doesn't really make sense to have one species that's sentient snail and another species that's a sentient slug that's far too similar. And so then you've got to replace one with the other. You know, it's a process, I guess.
Yeah. So when you create your fantasy worlds, do you begin with, they say, the physical side of things first, or how do you approach it?
It depends what you're doing. Yeah. I never think of everything's in service to sort of the specific goal of the narrative, and a lot of that has to do with the voice or, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. You know, I don't have any kind of hard or fast rule, I guess, other than that. You know, and I guess more broadly, like, it's not a math problem. You're not trying to construct an actual physical world that operates in that fashion or could operate in that fashion. That's not possible. You're just trying to figure out basically what information do you need to tell? What information do you need to know, and what information do you need to tell the reader? So maybe that's not that useful in terms of
that is very that no that is very useful. That's exactly what I do as well, because you do see people with their approaches to world, and they'll see examples of like Tolkien, who spent decades building the world before they even started telling stories, and they feel like they have to define the colors of the flowers and stupid little details that you don't need. I'm much more of a kind of, I don't have a lot of time to do this kind of stuff, so it's pure efficiency. What do we need? And the rest can be a bit of a mystery.
I think there's a sort of meta skill involved, as you certainly, and I think of it better as I've written more, just about figuring out how much you need to know about the world. Sometimes it's not much, and that's part of the joke. You know, I've written books where if you were to ask me, like, what's happening off page, I have no idea. Nothing's happening off page. You know, it's a. And then I have others, but, you know, that there's far more complex.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like, I find with like secondary characters that spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about their lives, and they might just be like passing someone on the streets. That'll be the extent of their involvement. And it's just knowing, like, to stop yourself going down them sort of rabbit holes, isn't it?
I think probably sometimes for some people, world building can be easier than writing, right? Writing's very hard to make yourself do. So to some degree, I guess as I've written more, I've grown skeptical of that. You know, your mind wants to default to doing something of like less labor intensive. So it's easy to go like, well, but what does the Dwarven Kingdom look like? And you're like, no, fuck that. You know, you've got 500 words you got to get. So.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Yeah. I've spoken to some people and they said, I've asked them about the stories and it's like, oh, I'm not writing any stories until the world's built.
Yeah.
It's a bit of procrastination almost, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, I think so. I mean, whatever. Yeah. There's certain people who, you know, whatever. James Joyce took 20 years to write a book, so some people can, you know, they can do the fuck you want. But
yeah,
I do think, as I said earlier about the march, building the march. You know, you're never like done with the world. It's a kind of continuous conversation between the larger plot and what you're writing at the time. You've got to give yourself space to discover the characters and what's one of them. World and So to me, it doesn't make sense really to separate those processes out in that fashion.
Definitely, yeah.
It's not like an RPG. You know, it's not as if you need to like be providing long, elaborate background kind of conceptions about what the different mechanics of the world are. You know, that's the people are only ever going to see what you let them see of the book. So they don't need to see the scaffold.
Yeah, that's totally true, yeah. So characters, it sounds like they play a big role because it's, you say, you've focused on the sort of family feuds, which I think is a really good idea. It's not used enough because it's something that's certainly relatable, isn't it? So how did you find the process of creating characters? Is that something that you take quite a structured approach to, or is it something that you just sort of feel your way through it and it develops as it goes?
Yeah, I mean, more the latter. I knew that I took a lot of inspiration from my family. Not exactly specific characters. No one really resembles me or any of my siblings particularly, but more just kind of dynamics. So running out from that way, you know, I don't know. Do you have siblings, Richie?
Yeah, I've got brother and sister, both younger.
Okay, so I mean, you know, you have these. I guess the idea was, I like the idea of trying to write a kind of a narrative about family, about the complexity of that growing up, and the way in which that can warp and change our relationships. And so, I guess writing it this way, it almost went kind of came. I more knew how I wanted each character to relate to other characters, and then I kind of found them as I was writing.
Yeah, I think that's the way with characters is as the story, you can only sort of define them quite vaguely at the beginning, I feel, because you don't really know them until you've put them through the story. And you can see, you sort of test them and you can see what they're made of, and you might develop in ways that you just couldn't anticipate. And then by the end of that, the story, the first draft, you know them pretty well, so that when you're editing them, editing that draft, I find the characters a lot more, they're all clear in my mind anyway, and you can sort of see whether their reactions or the responses to the challenges and conflicts of the story, it's compelling or inconsistent with who they are.
Circling a lot of the same territory. It's you know, you discover the thing. It's an organic process, right? You discover the thing as you go along, and different aspects of the process inform different other aspects. You sometimes have to make character decisions for plot reasons. You realize, like, this is too slow or not fast or whatever, and then you have to alter some things. But I would say this was a book probably where it is more character driven. And so there was a lot less of like, well, somebody's going to die in this scene, you know, figure out who, and more from the other angle.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, people do die. So there are narrative demands in almost any.
Is it the kind of story where the characters change?
So I probably should have explained this earlier in the, when you asked me to describe the march. There are like three narratives that that happen over the course of the book, which are begin with this sort of early childhood. It keeps going back and forth between the characters at different stages in their lives.
Yeah.
So that the first third of the book is about them as children and also what's going on in the present day. The second part of the book is about them as teenagers, and then you are sort of seeing, you know, the growth and the progression of the characters, quite literally from children to adults, and their relationships changing and so on and so forth.
Nice. That's really cool. I like that idea. You get there because, I've seen kids grow up, and even just the difference in a year, it's amazing. The interests fundamentally change. Their attitudes change, their voices change. It's so to see that progression is really interesting. So you've written quite a few books now, haven't you? And the Builders, your novella, was even nominated for a Hugo Award, which is brilliant. So can you tell us a
Thank
bit
you.
about your writing journey?
I wrote my first book, which is called The Straight Razor Cure in the UK, Lowtown in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I guess I wrote that when I was about 23, 24. And that's a sort of, as I was writing that book, I realized that writing was what I wanted to do. I was a directionless youth. In the process of creating that, I realized that this was something I was passionate about.
Yeah.
Gave me a lot of peace. So I was lucky enough, you know, to get that going, and I finished out a trilogy, which is sort of actually, you'll like this because you're a Wire fan, as I know from the pitch is sort of it's like a low fantasy Wire. The protagonist
Oh,
is a
I'm gonna have to watch the, yeah, read this now.
doing bad things, but you know he's doing it with a short sword instead of a 9mm. And yeah, and then, you know, I've written a bunch of stuff since then. I've written, but The Builders was a fun one that was nominated for the Hugo. It's the pitch with that is like The Wild Bunch meets Wind in the Willows, or just like a very violent, savage Western, but with woodland characters, if you haven't seen that at all.
Nice. Sounds great.
Yeah, it was fun. That's a fun one. Some of your books you like less than others, but I still find The Builders pretty entertaining.
Yeah. And what was that like getting the nomination?
Night? I don't know. I mean, I didn't win, so it wasn't really that exciting.
I know. I suppose it's a bit bittersweet thing, but it's still.
Yeah, you know, it's. I don't know how much stock I put in awards, honestly. So, I mean, it was sort of funny. Like, I had no idea that this was. It had never occurred to me prior to my editor telling me I got nominated for a Hugo that this was. Like, I just hadn't thought about it. It wasn't something that, you know, I don't really know how wise it is to put much stock in it, to be blunt.
Yeah, it's a good approach because it's obviously, like you say, it sounds like you write because you love it and it makes you happy and, like you say, it gives you peace. And that's the only thing that you're really interested in. And if people like your books and publish them, I mean, it's a bonus.
I mean, it would be nice if I would also like money for it. But I mean, it's just, you can't, no, it's impossible to pretend that this is a, you know, that how much did you ever trust the opinion of a bunch of strangers, you know, about anything, really, whether it's your book or any other, anything in the world, you know, like there's nothing, if you were just like, hey, a bunch of strangers think that, you know, you should do this, you'd be like, great. I don't know these people. Why are you telling me that? So awards are like that, except afterwards you're like, thank you.
Nice. So your journey then, it's been really brilliant by the sounds of it. Have you had any challenges along the way?
God, are you kidding, man? I mean, you know, yeah, my life is one long, you know, streak of endless disappointment and misery. I mean, you know, the flip side of the thing a minute ago where I was saying, you know, you can't put much stock in an award or in people liking your book is, you know, the reverse, right? You part of the reason you can't put that much stock in people liking your book and in getting good reactions to things is because I've had a long career and I've gotten a lot of bad reactions to things and bad, you know, disappointing outcomes with projects and with things like this, innumerable. So similarly, you know, that probably is a lot of my impetus for trying to not take, you know, the positive stuff too seriously, because it puts you in a situation where then when things don't go your way, you know, that really eats at your soul. It eats at my soul anyway, but I still I do what I can.
I think it's hard not to let it get to you. Like, whenever, like, you get reviews, both for me anyway, I'll skim over the good ones and I'll focus on the negative ones.
Sure.
I don't know if you do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think as humans, most of us are prone to pain tends to hit us harder than pleasure, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think I don't know a writer that doesn't spend a lot of time feeling shitty about their career and their, you know, output.
Yeah.
They exist, but I don't. I mean, you know, whatever. There's sociopaths in the world, but I mean, the vast majority of people are in the same boat that you or I are in.
Yeah. I know. I think it's just something that you just got to persevere with, isn't it?
Yes, I guess. I mean, you know, it is an absolute precondition of the activity. they're inseparable. Unless you want to never print anything or never let anyone read anything you do, you know, you that's what it is to create things and to put it out there and to let people shit on it in one capacity or another. You're gonna do. So, yeah. I guess I'm. I mean, yes, I guess I'm persevering. So that's you know, that's what I agree with you then.
Have you had any like funny bad reviews? You can describe them like that.
I mean,
I'll tell you one I've had.
All right, go.
I got a 1-star review once because the book didn't have pictures in it.
Hmm. So yeah.
Quite an entertaining one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you expand reviews to like Amazon or Goodreads or whatever, like, you know, yeah, I've had some very just dumb, you know, just people ones. That, you know, they're just like, I don't think you understand what a review is or whatever. But, I, you know, I mean, it what are you going to do? You know, there's a stay off social media.
No, you kind of, it's like you say, it's part of the game. You've got to deal with it. Have you found like any sort of the recent trends in writing? Like, AI seems to just be dominating everything at the moment. And I mean, I've not come across it personally firsthand, but I know other writer friends of mine are saying that they know publishers have closed submissions because they've just been flooded with AI written books.
Yeah.
What have you come across?
iWorks World or one of the sci-fi magazines were pausing submissions. I'm not sure how much that's really going to affect novels or longer things, to be honest.
Yeah,
in large part because editors don't look at the slush. Like you know, if you're the editor for Clark's World, you have to go through the 5,000 things that have come in your direction. Most editors, you know, they're not looking through the slush pile. You can't just email them in mass. So. It's going to probably affect the world in a lot of ways, but in the short term, I don't know how much it's going to have to. It's going to change novels.
Yeah, I still think it's just way off coming, like being able to write anything like close to a good novel. But I'd say short stories. Yeah, it's going to cause publishers a lot, like especially small like magazines, because they just don't have the resources to keep up with the demand. But yeah, tangent there anyway.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. How do you find the process of coming up with ideas? Have you always sort of had them sort of readily at hand, or have you ever had any barren spells where it's been tough to come up with anything new?
I mean, there are periods where it's more difficult to write, but I wouldn't say that's because I don't feel like I have things to write about. It's more that maybe I lack the energy or the drive, you know, to do that kind of work. But I probably have more. I have more ideas than I'll ever be able to write. Whether they're good ideas or not, I'll leave that out to a reader, I guess. But I don't really find that difficult.
And what do you do when you get ideas? You just sort of like, do you have a process for like storing them and then coming back to them later, or do you sort of like make mental notes?
Mental notes normally, I guess. If something that really grabs me, I'll maybe dash a few things off. But it's not really like I've had a great idea for a novel that I then forgot. You know, they're not quite that. They're a little more elaborate than that. They're not like that.
Yeah.
It's not like I could compare a password or something. And you just log into Amazon.
What's your writing process like? Do you like to plan things out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would sort of, like we were saying earlier, it's a conversation. You know, and a lot of it too depends on what you're writing, because for some things that have to be much more tightly constructed, like mysteries, if you're writing a mystery, that really has to be planned. Things have to be more mechanic, you know, more clockwork with that kind of thing. With other stuff, you know, you can be a little looser and try to, you know, as I've gotten, I think when I was younger, because for me, the fun part of writing is just the first draft, throwing up words, I was more willing to kind of like, I like doing that. So I did that more. And then as I've written more over the course, you know, a long time now, I gradually began to realize that was not a good use of time. And just letting yourself write another fight scene or another, you know, whatever conversation between two characters that you like writing about, even if there's never going to be a, you know, even if you're not really going to use this later on, that just isn't a good use of time. So I've tried to be more, as I've gotten older, be a little more conscientious in terms of what I throw on the page, what sort of side avenues I follow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to be. Like, the experience doesn't half help. But have you ever experimented with sort of just like winging it completely?
I don't know how completely. I would say usually when I first start writing something, the first thing I'm looking for is like voice, the voice of how I want to work with that. So, you know, the first 10,000 words are kind of just throwing stuff on the page and seeing what comes out. But longer term, you know, the closest I ever did to that, the first book, I really had no idea what I was doing at all. Ever did anything before. Although I went back and did some edits, the first draft was, you know, I was just me throwing shit on the page, going, you know, kind of moving ahead. And it's not great. You know, there are reasons that a little bit of forethought is wise. In writing, as in everything else.
I know. I speak to a lot of writers, and this is my view as well. I think most of the writing gets done when you're editing, but everyone hates it. Do you have any advice for editing?
For editing? I mean, not just general advice. I mean, if you have, you know, I don't know, like just a general, you know, you have to edit. Like, I don't know. I mean, it is a necessary part of the process, obviously. And it's not that much fun. And you got to push yourself through, I guess.
Do you take like more of a structured approach? Do you like look at certain elements first, or do you just go line by line and just...
It depends where you are in the, where you are in like what draft you're in, right? You know, if you're doing something, you know, how narrowly you're editing, right? You know, you start with broader stuff and then you get gradually, you know, down to looking at. So by the end of the, you know, the second or the third time I'm working on the draft, I'm going line by line.
Oh, I think when you get to that point, you can sort of relax a little bit, hopefully. you come content that the characters are up to, you know, doing things that just don't make any sense, I suppose, and the plot all makes sense and ties together. So,
I guess, or you just accept this is the book. At a certain point, the book you have is the book you've written. And, you know, you're like, yeah, do I really like Jack? It doesn't matter. Jack's in the fucking book, man. We're not.
Yeah, otherwise you just gotta keep changing every little thing, don't you? And you just gotta accept this for what it is.
You know, yeah, at some point you do.
So, question to finish on. What advice would you give to anyone thinking about giving writing a go?
As a general point, to harken back to something earlier, I would say if you want my advice, you have to, that being a writer means that you have to write, and that means you actually sit down and do the difficult part of that task. I have no advice. I don't have advice for anybody. I don't know what I'm doing. you know.
Well, but on the professional level, you've had great success, like on a professional writing level. What about like sort of achieving them things? Like, any advice on that front?
No, honestly, I am the world's worst person to ask about any professional business. I'm terrible at figuring out what's going to sell. I have a horrible sense of that. I guess, you know, I would say sort of in terms of both, writing is neither particularly lucrative, you know, or easy. So unless you genuinely enjoy the activity, there's probably not much point in doing it. And, you know, if you do enjoy it, then you should do it. And if you're serious about it, then you have to work really hard and you have to write a lot and you have to read constantly and read a lot of different things, read things in different genres and things, you know, expose yourself to ideas and to modes of language that are not necessarily familiar or easy to you. And so that was my rambling series of answers.
Oh, that's a great, particularly on the reading point, that's a really good bit of advice. Just read anything.
I should have started with that, right?
That was brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a great chat. How can we find out more about you?
You could, if you're really inclined, you could go to my website, which is Daniel Polansky, polansky.com. And I have, you know, links and pictures of myself and all the things that one has to have these days. You can see what I look like. It'll be fabulous for everybody.
Yeah, well, I'll put a link in the description. And it's been great chatting to you. And hope all goes well with March's end.
I appreciate it, Richie. Thank you for speaking with me. Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll speak to you soon. Daniel, thank you very much again for giving up your time to chat all about March's End and writing as a whole. It was a fantastic chat. I really hope you enjoyed it listening at home. If you did, don't forget to subscribe or follow the show so you don't miss any future episodes. We've got some fantastic topics in the pipeline, and I've got some very, very interesting guests. I've been doing a lot of good research, trying to find suitable people and very interesting people as well. So if you don't want to miss it, just hit subscribe or that follow button. If you enjoyed today's show, it really does mean an awful lot if you can give us a quick share on social media or tell anyone who you think may be interested about what we do and what we chat about. It helps us an awful lot because we don't really have any money to spend on marketing. So a little bit of word of mouth goes a long, long way. And if you'd like to join our writing community, just click the link in the description again. You'll get an invite to our Discord server, which has over 400 people, and we have monthly events. You can join a weekly critique group, or you can just chat with fellow writers about the things you love most. And that is all for today. Thank you very much for listening, and really do hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back at the end of this month with another episode. And until then, keep on scribbling.